welcome to another episode of Arte Labore, a Blackburn Rovers podcast from the Lancashire Telegraph. A 1-1 draw with Huddersfield Town, neither a step forward or backwards, I suppose. And myself, I'm Ryan Hildred, as always, will be taking you through all the key talking points after another week of Blackburn Rovers. Just madness, mayhem, hectic, the usual verbs. Ryan, how are you?
Yeah, very well, thanks, Elliot. It was a bit of a meh footballing weekend. I think that is the word I would use to describe it, meh. And the weather's changed, and that's probably the most interesting thing of the last few days. So that's how I'm feeling at the moment. But apart from that, I am very well, very good.
Just a general shrug of shoulders and walks away from Ewood Park. From you.
That's it. Yeah, I tweeted that I was feeling very flat for the longest time in a while, and that's how I felt. I felt extremely flat leaving Ewood on Saturday, which we'll come on to, I'm sure, very shortly.
I'd imagine you didn't feel very flat after 7 minutes, though, when Blackburn Rovers made what was a very good start, and I thought started generally quite brightly, and obviously got the goal. And like when you think about the recent games against Rotherham, and also against Huddersfield, you're thinking, you're playing against a low block, you know Rovers are going to have all the ball, just need an early goal. Scored an early goal in both of the games, didn't go on to win them, but you thought it was a good start anyway when Adam Wharton pounces on a loose ball from Jonathan Hogg. Really good anticipation from Adam. His first touch is very underrated, I think, because the first touch really pushes it past the defender, who obviously the pass was intended for, Spencer, stops him coming back round and shutting the chance out and puts him basically clean through on goal. Really good finish, confident strike into the far corner. And yes, a mistake and an individual error from Huddersfield, but Rovers, for once this season, taking full advantage and putting their chance in the back of the net.
Yeah, it was an ideal start. We spoke last week about the importance of the next three home games. If you take the Wrexham FA Cup game out of the equation, you look at Huddersfield, you look at QPR and you look at Stoke. Obviously, Stoke in and around us at the moment in that kind of cluster of teams that are hoping that they're not going to get involved in a relegation battle. And then obviously Huddersfield and QPR hunting us down. So I said last week that 7 points is what I was hoping for from these three games to just rid ourselves of any fears around relegation and things. And to go 1-0 up so early against Huddersfield was brilliant because, yeah, Huddersfield have caused us problems over the years and they like coming to Ewood Park. It was another good crowd from them just coming across the M62. They would have been looking at Rovers thinking, right, if we are going to catch some sides above us, I think Rovers are one of the sides to go for with the form that we're in. So to get that really quick start and just give the fan base a little injection after what's been a really tough couple of months for us, it was a fantastic start. And all credit to Adam Wharton because, yeah, Huddersfield were just knocking it around a bit at the back. And I think he really disguises his movement really well. And obviously it's a bit of a silly pass. I can't remember who it's from. Is it Hogg who plays the pass?
Yeah,
Jonathan Hogg. So it was a bit of a stupid pass that he's playing, but Wharton, I think, did disguise the movement really well and obviously got the interception and cool, calm and collected. I mean, Sam Smodic aside, there's probably no one else I want in that position to just steady the nerve, slot it away and cool as you like. And obviously the little cheeky celebration in front of the Huddersfield fans as well. So, yeah, the perfect start, really ideal for us.
Yeah, stroked it into the corner really nicely. And Rovers obviously look like they've benefited from a formation change. We spoke last week on the podcast and in the last couple of weeks about how Thompson just needed to do something different, needed to change things. And to his credit, he did that. It was a switch to a what looked on paper like 3-5-2, but was actually kind of more 3-4-3 in actual fact in the way it shaped up, whether by design or whether just by players drifting into wider areas to get on the ball, given how low Huddersfield's block was. But yeah, I think I mentioned either last week or the week before about the potential of bringing Chris Senny in as a left wing back and moving Pickering as a left-sided centre back because of the qualities he has. And I thought Rovers had some really good and nice movement down that left side, particularly where Chris Senny and it was Smodics who was drifting out into that left channel, which he normally does in fairness when it's a 4-3-3 as well. And then you've got Pickering almost coming on the, well, sort of an underlap really, but overlapping from centre-back as well. So you'd got three players in that channel and they created some decent openings. Pickering swung in a few decent crosses, I thought, for Gallagher in that sort of first 20 minutes. And then Hayden Carter goes off injured. And Jon said after the match that he felt that that was a big point in terms of just punctured Rovers' momentum. And I completely agreed with him because from that point, they were really slow and sort of passive when they got started again and it let Huddersfield back into the game. I also think from a tactical point of view, Carter is particularly good at stepping into midfield and driving forward with the ball. We've seen plenty of times where he's picked the ball up, drove into space. I mean, he got two assists against Cambridge, and the first one of those very much came from him getting the ball, driving forward, getting in space, and ended up playing the ball through for Smodic, who finished. And by bringing Scott Wharton on and moving Dom Hyam from the centre to the right, Dom Hyam's perfectly capable of playing right centre-back. He did that for Coventry, in fact. That was his regular position. But he doesn't quite have the same qualities in terms of driving forward with the ball specifically. Dom Hyam's very good at passing the ball. He's a very good ball player. He's obviously a very good man-for-man defender. But Carter's probably better at stepping into midfield and driving forward to create those overloads like Pickering was on the other side. So I do think Rovers lost something with that a little bit on the ball. And yeah, just the Carter injury seemed to really stop the momentum and the good start they'd made. Got Huddersfield back into the game in terms of the general play. And they, of course, got the equaliser shortly after that. It's another set piece. Rovers have now got the worst defensive record from set pieces. They've conceded 12 times from corners or set plays this season. Really good cross, good header from Helic. And I'm really frustrated with myself because all week I've been telling my friends, Michael Helic's going to score a header against Rovers, put some money on it. They did, I didn't. And so they got a little bit of a cash injection. And it just felt very typical, very predictable. What I will say, at least, and whether this is very much, you know, trying to defend the indefensible, considering how poor they've been, it was at least a better goal to concede, because at least it's a good cross. It is a very good header. It's also a player that scored 8 goals. That was his 8th of the season. Rather than letting the ball bounce in the 6-yard box like they did against West Brom, which was just schoolboy defending, I felt this was probably a better work goal from a Huddersfield point of view rather than shocking defending from Rovers. If we'd not had the track record of really poor defending from set pieces in the weeks gone by, we probably wouldn't be focusing on it as a set piece goal.
Yeah, I'll just take all those things in order that you did them there. So the formation, yeah, I was really happy to see the formation before the game, because we have been critical of JDT for the past few weeks here about the lack of in-game changes and the lack of responding to the situation. So I thought moving to the wing-back formation on paper before the game looked quite exciting for us, because, yeah, you'd spoken about Chris Enney and obviously Callum Britton as well. And I've got to say, Callum Britton in particular, I thought, looked a very confident player playing at that right wing back. He was taking a few more of those risks. He was getting forward. He was doing those little neat Cruyff turns and things like that. Things I don't think he'd necessarily do with the way that we're playing and the form that we're in if he's playing straight right back. So I noticed a difference in Britton straight away. Chris Enney, I thought he played like someone making his debut. I thought he was a little bit clumsy at times. I thought the ball was getting stuck under his feet. And look, this is a 20-year-old lad on loan from Villa playing in his first championship game. So I can forgive him for having a bit of a nervy performance.
I think he's got some good raw attributes, though. But I agree there were times where I thought he played a little bit safe, which is natural to do when you're still acclimatising to your surroundings, your team. It's where I thought he could have really gone at a fullback or really gone and attack the defender, because he's clearly got the athleticism and the quality to do so. But yeah, I thought there was a few of those moments where I just want a little bit more, a bit sharper, a bit quicker. It was his first start since November as well. It's worth considering. So that's why he didn't play at West Brom, for example, because he's still getting up to match speed.
That's it. And I think we'll come on to Carter in a moment. I think had the game progressed in that kind of wing-back formation uninterrupted, maybe we would have seen more of Britton and Chris Enney getting down either flank. I don't think we saw it in the way that I thought we would have seen it, because you're right, I think the Carter sub really did disturb us. And I think it disturbed us for a couple of reasons. One, you've touched on that shift of Dom Hyam out to the right. I think Hayden Carter in that right centre-back role does it really well. And James Hill used to do it really well as well when he was there, just being able to progress into those right-back areas and into those channels. I think it's not Don Hyam's game. I think he wants to be that central presence on the one who's commanding. The second thing that I think contributed to disturbing that flow was you then got three left-footers in a back five, so to speak. So I just felt we were a little bit imbalanced, because I think JDT probably wanted to play down that right-hand side with Britton playing and with some of the other players, Gallagher obviously coming back and things. I think the right-hand side was probably naturally where we would want to go. But having those three left-footers in the back five, I just felt we looked a bit imbalanced. And Scott Wharton didn't really put a foot wrong, to be honest, but we were just a bit imbalanced, I think. And you're right, it did shake us up a little bit. And then Yeah, the third thing that obviously shook us up, the goal. I was in the Jack Walker on Saturday and I was right behind the Sauber Thomas corner. So I'm not really putting any blame on Rovers for this one. Sauber Thomas, to be fair to him, he got a bit of stick from the Blackburn end, which then turned into applause. So there was some good banter and sportsmanship there between the fans and Sauber Thomas. But I was right behind the flight of the ball. It was a lovely ball in. And if you're someone like Helic, yes, Rovers, we've probably got to mark him closer or do whatever, but he's obviously stolen that march. It's a ball that's there to be attacked and it's a cracking header. So yeah, we could have maybe defended it a little bit better, but no blame on anyone, so to speak, because it was just a quality ball in from Sauber Thomas. And do you know what? Sauber Thomas, fair play to him. He could have gone a bit mental in that corner against the Rovers fans, but he didn't. He just kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, yeah, that was a good delivery for me. So bit of a sucker punch when it came, coming after that Hayden Carter injury as well, and probably set the path of that first half, I think, with everything else that followed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It was a great cross, great header. And suddenly it's 1-1, and yeah, Rovers didn't really create another clear-cut opportunity for the remaining 75, 65 minutes, whatever it was. And Huddersfield, of course, had the best chances. Rovers had all the ball. They finished with 67% possession, but it was Huddersfield that very much had the best opportunities. Certainly, there was a really glaring let off just before half time, where Tronstad, who I thought was quite poor, if I'm being honest, I thought he struggled in midfield. There was a few loose passes from him, but certainly by the high bar that he has set this season, it wasn't his best game. Set. Scott Wharton very short. He doesn't get to the ball. Josh Cromer nips around him, runs the length of the half. I thought he'd actually cocked up by squaring it. I thought he should have gone direct at goal, but it's a good pass. And Radoni's just got to score and he just opens his foot up too much and puts it wide. So that's a huge opportunity. And Rovers could have gone in behind at half time, certainly from that big chance.
Yeah, huge let off. And I think Huddersfield, to be fair to them, it was the perfect game plan from Darren Moore. So 67% possession. Why are Huddersfield going to come and impose themselves with the situation that they're in? So for me, the onus is all on Rovers to be the dominant force at home. And we've reflected on this on the podcast. This is where we have struggled this season. When we're at home, when we're at Ewood Park, and especially in this run of form that we're having at the moment, sometimes we are struggling to impose ourselves and be that dominant force. So particularly after Huddersfield get that equaliser, Darren Moore's literally saying to Rovers, we'll sit, we'll soak, we'll absorb it, we'll be tight, we'll be solid. And to be fair, I thought they did defend really well and they shut us out of a lot of areas in that final third. So I thought it was an excellent defensive performance. And we've said it before at championship level, you get the basics right at the back when the game is 1-1 or when a game is just 1-0 to the opposition or there's only a goal in it, you are always going to get a chance at championship level. It's poor from Tronstad, and I was just expecting the net to bulge, really, just with how flat that first half was. The only surprise for me was that Jack Radoni didn't score. It's a huge let-off for Rovers at that point, and I thought we were going to concede. And yeah, that would have summed up the first half, that, yeah, Rovers necessarily didn't do a lot wrong in the first half, but they also didn't do a lot right in that first half, and that would have been just our luck to be 2-1 down. We weren't. We got away with it, so you know, you have to say that 1-1 at halftime was probably fair with how we were playing after that Helic goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Just before we move on from the first half, there was obviously a really nice moment in the 37th minute where a big round of applause all around Ewood Park in the 37th minute for Glenn Entwistle, someone myself and Ryan know personally, particularly you, Ryan, who obviously worked with Glenn during the Rovers chat days when you were involved there. Really, really sad that he obviously passed a couple of weeks ago now. Just a really big loss to the Blackburn Rovers community. And yeah, just really nice to see the club come together as it has done on so many occasions when it was Matt Sillitoe earlier in the season as well. That was obviously a brilliant moment. And really nice that I'm sure he's looking down and appreciating that gesture from the Rovers fans.
Yeah, it's been a tough couple of weeks or so. And obviously, I did the thing with Dan on the Rovers chat channel to sum up my thoughts about Glenn. But yeah, not nice circumstances. But yeah, a great tribute from the Rovers fans. And for those of you that did do the applause on Saturday, just on behalf of Glenn's family and friends, thank you for doing that, because I know how much it meant to the family. Yeah, weird just looking up at Glenn's place in the Blackburn end and not seeing him there. But we nearly got a moment of irony, because actually there was obviously one big talking point before halftime, Elliot, which was the penalty, which, you know, at the time I thought it was a penalty. And looking back, I think it was a penalty. And actually that came in and around the 37th minute of Glenn's applause. And as I've said on that video with Dan, Glenn absolutely despised EFL referees. So that would have been quite fitting to get the penalty at that point. But weirdly, it's quite fitting that we didn't, given his hatred for EFL refs. But I thought it was a really poor decision. For me, it looked a pen on Sam Gallagher.
I haven't actually seen a replay of it because it's not been in any of the highlight packages that I've seen, and I've not had a chance to watch the full 90 back, which is probably on Rovers TV at this point. But I thought it looked clumsy at the time, I have to say. And then nothing really got made of it after the match, so it kind of escaped consciousness for a little bit of it. But yeah, it looked clumsy, Gallagher getting his heels clipped.
Yeah, it did. Clumsy is the right word. And there's no attempt to play the ball for me from the defender. So I've absolutely seen those given at championship level. And I do think it was a penalty. So a real shame it wasn't given. But as I say, probably quite fitting that it wasn't, because that's certainly a memory of Glenn and all the EFL decisions that haven't gone Rovers' way over the years.
Absolutely. Second half kind of followed the same pattern of play where Rovers had all of the ball. Huddersfield quite happy to sit in a low block, soak up the pressure, and Rovers just didn't do enough to create enough clear-cut chances. They didn't really work Lee Nichols at all, apart from a few pot shots. Arne Sigurdsson coming on, he had a few attempts, but nothing that really extended the goalkeeper at all. And Huddersfield again had the big chances, and the first of those was for the substitute, Bojan Radulovic. Nice flowing move, played out to the right. He does skip inside of Scott Wharton. And fair play to Ainsley Pears, back obviously in goal after 3.5 months out, really proactive off his line, really good save to get to the feet of the striker really quickly, and a really big save, because at that moment, with the way Rovers have been playing and struggling to carve any openings, if they'd gone behind and with the current form as well, you know, Ewapop would have turned, and not probably in a positive way for Rovers. So that was a big moment and a really big confidence boost for Ainsley Pears, who I thought generally was really assured. A big upgrade on certainly the recent performances of Leopold Wallstead, without wanting to be too critical. Commanded his area. His handling was clean and tidy, and certainly nothing he could have done about the Helic goal. So a really good performance from Pears, and that was an important save at a crucial moment in the match.
Yeah, it was good to see him back because, you know, Wallstead had struggled and needed taking out the firing line. And I thought Ainsley Pears was really confident and really assured, as you say. I think there was a lot of things that Pears did in the game that I'd expect of a championship level goalkeeper. I think, unfortunately, we've had our bar lowered a little bit in recent weeks in terms of some of the mistakes that Wallstead has made. But Pears came in and certainly gave me much more confidence with him in the net. Made a smart save in the first half, with one that he pushed away. And then that save there that you're talking about, that for me is a really, really good save, because I think the lad's done really well to fashion that chance for himself. And if Pears isn't proactive at that point, he's essentially got a free shot on goal. So I think he did really well to spot that danger and come out. And at 1-1, you know, that's an important save, because if Rovers fall behind 2-1 at that point, then I don't even think we're equalising, to be honest. Well, we didn't get a winner, did we? So we're probably not equalising. So that could have been a really damaging goal. And if you think about the context of the season as well, you know, I've just been talking about Huddersfield and QPR potentially looking at a side like Rovers to try and grab and catch into this relegation battle. Huddersfield win that game, you know, they closed the gap on us. QPR won at the weekend as well. And if they come to Ewood Park and win, they're within 6 points of us. So actually, a really important save from Pears to stop that game going to 2-1 and Huddersfield obviously grabbing the win, so to speak. So yeah, good all-round performance from Ainsley Pears, and good to see him back, most certainly.
Yeah, definitely. I thought, as you said, I think it was the speed of which he came off his line, which probably was the most impressive thing, because it made the chance a lot harder for Radulovic than it would have been without being so quick and proactive off his line. So yeah, that was a good performance from him back in the goal. Probably Rovers' best player, if I'm being completely honest. And then obviously Kasumu had a really good chance as well, where Huddersfield, in fairness, really good football to work their way out through Rovers' press. And then a couple of passes and Kasumu's clear of the defence, drags it just wide of the Pears' right-hand post. And yeah, Rovers didn't really got a lot to talk about in terms of Blackburn chances. There was obviously that one towards the end where it's flashed across the box, Nichols palms it out, and it hits Smodics and goes at wide. But yeah, there just wasn't enough guile and creativity and confidence, I felt, and conviction in Rovers' passing to move the ball quick enough to open Huddersfield up. And I think that is symptomatic of a team that has won one of their last 10 championship games. It felt a little bit slow and predictable at times. And I think that definitely is part of the confidence that's lacking at the minute, which is just perfectly natural when you're having a poor run of form. I thought they missed a 1v1 dribbler at times. You know, when you're playing against a low block, sometimes that and your quick like combination play and your sharp passing isn't coming off. Sometimes you could do with a 1v1 dribbler to come off the bench. And Rovers just don't have someone like that. You know, they obviously Kristensen and Britton were offering that threat from wing back. But then Sigurdsson comes on, and Sigurdsson is not slow, but he's not rapid either. I kind of think Rovers' wingers and the players that play out wide are all very similar. You think Morans plays off the right, or Hedges, or Sigurdsson. They're all players that are sort of almost more number 10s than they are wingers. They're not wingers, are they? They're inside forwards or sort of playmaker types that want the ball to feet, that want to find cute little pockets and play little passes around the corner, one touch intricate play. They haven't got someone that wants to actually get down the line and really run at defenders. And that's probably something they've not had in the squad last season either, to be honest. Probably something they've not had since Reda Kadra left, in truth. So that definitely feels like a potential skill set that is perhaps missing, and perhaps that would have been very useful to have off the bench or from the start against what was a low block. It is probably worth saying, in fairness to Rovers, that whenever they've played against teams that want to sit in, they have carved them open. You know, it's very rare that we're sat here talking about a game where Rovers haven't created enough. Usually it's the fact they've created plenty and not put the ball in the back of the net. Whereas on Saturday, actually, it was they had one chance, really, or one clear-cut opportunity, and they scored it, which is good. But yeah, it was a weird feeling coming away from me, but it was certainly a different experience and different way in which they didn't win the game to usual.
I think the reason I was feeling flat is I've probably gone beyond the point of anger, because I think I've expressed anger on this pod before in terms of what JDT is and isn't doing to change games, you know, in-game and things like that. And I know that there are variables at play here in terms of injury, squad depth and actual quality coming off the bench. But I thought we needed to change something formationally on Saturday. So as much as I really salute the manager for going to the wing backs and making the changes, and we've reflected on what happened after Hayden Carter went off, I thought this game was crying out for the formation shift from Rovers. As I've said,
I think we all expected that to happen when Pickering went off, because JRC got ready, and I think everyone were expecting to go to a four, JRC to play right back and Britton play at left back.
Yeah,
but he kept the same structure, and JRC just played in that right centre back role, which again worked from the point of view of, like Carter, he's obviously going to advance the ball and drive. But yeah, because Sigurdsson also came on and basically was left wing back. So, and we, you know, Sigurdsson isn't the best defensively playing left wing, never as a wing back. So it probably felt that was maybe slightly overkill, and probably should have gone back to a four at that point. But obviously it's very difficult to criticise in one sense when we've asked him to make a change. So yeah, they did have setbacks, because losing Pickering obviously is a big blow as well.
Yeah, so as I say, I'm saluting the fact he made the changes before the game, and I was really excited to see the wing-backs. But with the way that game was panning out, I've just mentioned the onus is fully on Rovers to go and break Huddersfield down. Huddersfield were really set, they were really comfortable, and defensively they were absolutely on it. So we need to do something to disrupt the flow of that game and do something different that's going to hurt the opposition. Pickering's injury, if we just touch on that before I come back to what I'm talking about here. What a blow that is. We were only saying last week that Harry Pickering has been one of the first names on the team sheet, in the sense of he's always available. Is there any news on that injury yet, Elliot? Because for me, it looked a bad one, because he looked in agony with that hamstring when he pulled up.
Yeah, it was one of them. Like, we've all seen them in other games where as soon as they go in for a loose ball and they pull up like that, you know the hamstring's done. No, they will have gone for a scan probably yesterday, maybe today, and we'll find out from Jon later in the week on the severity of that, unless the club decide to provide an update beforehand. But generally speaking, it's usually later in the week when we do the press conference, because they might need to let it settle down before they scan it, or they might need a second opinion and things like that. It didn't look good, it certainly looked, it's wrong to speculate on an injury, but if we're all going for gut feeling, it felt months rather than weeks, that one.
Totally agree with you, because you see players get hamstring injuries where there's a bit of a limp off the pitch and whatever. You know, he had to be carried off the pitch by two players. He could barely walk. So, yeah, feels like months to me. And obviously that's going to disrupt our plans, because after signing cover for Harry Pickering, we've now only got Chris Senny at left back unless you play Callum Britton there. So before the Pickering hamstring injury, I was sat there thinking we could do with a formation change here. He got the opportunity with the Harry Pickering injury because, for me, move Callum Britton to left wing back, move Callum Britton to left back, JRC right back, Carter and Higham as the middle two, and then obviously go back to that tried and tested formation that we've got with Tronstad as the sitter, Adam Wharton, and it probably would have been Smodic in there in that three, and then Moran. I probably would have kept Gallagher on, actually, but I know that he'd obviously put a lot of
legs in. That was because of injury. That was because he's just coming back rather than actually performance related.
That's right, Moore and Sigurdsson, and then obviously Talalovic coming on. Then we're into that formation that suits us a bit better, the one that we've been playing, and then we go and ask questions of Huddersfield. I think we completely miss the opportunity to change stuff up. And then, as you say, playing Sigurdsson as that left wing back, he did not want to be chasing Sauber Thomas down that right flank. And then, what was the lad's name who came on who missed the chance? Kasumu. And then Kasumu, who came on, it's no coincidence that he's had the chance that he did, because there was absolutely acres down that flank after Sigurdsson came on. It's not Sigurdsson's fault. You know, I bet Sigurdsson's never played left wing back for Iceland or any of his previous clubs. So I thought we were asking a hell of a lot of Sigurdsson at that point. So again, the only surprise for me is the lad has not put the chance away. Again, I was expecting the net to bulge with how passive Rovers were in that game, how easy it was for Huddersfield to defend us. I was just waiting for that ultimate sucker punch at the end with them rolling the ball into the net. Yeah, we probably had 10 minutes at the end of the game where we got down the right flank in particular. Britton and JRC were getting beyond the fullbacks and putting some balls into the box, but it was all hopeful. It was all ifs, buts and maybes. There wasn't that real fashion chance. I think the closest we got, and it's probably between a half chance and a good chance, was the JRC volley that he's put right into the Blackburn end. That's probably as good as it got. Apart from that, I think I'm counting Tronstad's half volley that went wide, and then Callum Britton skying it into the Blackburn end.
Goalkeeper's not made a save, has he? That's the bottom line.
That's it. That is the bottom line. So when you're at home to Huddersfield, when Huddersfield are sat there and saying, come and break us down, when you're in the run of form that we are, the onus is absolutely on Rovers to do something different and go and win that game of football. So unfortunately for me, I'm still left in the same position where I'm thinking, does JDT know how to change games? Does he know how to use what he's currently got in this squad to go and get a result? That is still the alarm bell going off in my head at the moment. And the reason I felt flat coming out of Ewood is I think I'm beyond anger. I'm beyond getting agitated about this. I think I've now accepted it. It's just like, ugh, it's just flat. Apathy. It's like, ugh, apathy. Yeah, I'm in that territory. And I love JDT. He's been an absolute breath of fresh air, but this stuff is worrying me, because in particular on Saturday, in particular with that Pickering injury, we had the chance to change it and he didn't. So I just don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, not ideal drawing at home to a team in the just above the bottom three, and obviously does very little to lift the doom and gloom. There's 9 days left of the transfer window. Interesting that Jon completely pivoted and decided to change tack last week. Didn't want to talk about transfers at the pre-match press conference. Didn't want to talk about transfers after the match either. So, and he made a specific point before the press conference on Friday of saying, I'm not going to talk about transfers today. So all a bit hush-hush at Rovers at the minute. Still expect Niall Ennis to probably go this week, maybe, but that's not imminent. Wasn't picked in the matchday squad. Be interested to see if he plays for the 21s this evening at West Brom. And it's a bit quiet on incomings, to be honest. They've got irons in the fire, I have no doubt about that. But at the time of recording, I don't believe there's anything imminent, so we shall see what comes in the next 9 days, of course. Let's look ahead to the FA Cup, because that's Rovers' next game, and they take on Wrexham as Hollywood comes to Ewood. It's going to be 7,000 in the Darwin end, which will make for a very good atmosphere on BBC Wales. All stands are open, which is nice. £15 tickets, which isn't horrendous. Hopefully we'll get a decent atmosphere at Ewood on the Monday night. Feels like a long way away, that.
It does. It does. It's obviously a week away, isn't it? just when you were saying about transfers there, and I'll come on to the FA Cup, Elliot, I think the reason I'm feeling flat is it's not just on the pitch where I feel we need a spark and we need an ignition. It's off the pitch as well. We need something good off the pitch. We need a nice transfer. We need some good news about Venkies. We need some good news from somewhere to ignite Rovers back into life. And when I say Rovers, I mean the players on the pitch and I mean the fan base off it as well. I think we're all feeling flat at the moment. I think there's probably a very low energy. Well, so, and the staff as well. So we need an ignition from somewhere. So if it's not going to be in the Championship, if it's not going to be in terms of you telling me that we're making a bloody good Championship signing or someone on loan from a Premier League club, well, it might as well be the FA Cup. And we've had some great joy in the cup competitions under JDT. And on paper, this is a fantastic cup tie. Real shame that they've moved it to the Monday night, because I think that's ruled out quite a few people who would have gone and contributed to that fantastic atmosphere. But this has got cup set all over it, hasn't it? With the way Rovers are playing and all these things that we've said about Rovers' home form this season, if we just take the Championship home form, when the onus is on us to go and win games of football, when the onus is on us to go and get the job done, that for me, Wrexham are one of the last sides I want to be playing at home in that regard, because they will come and exploit all the nervousness and all the underconfidence that we've got at the moment. And their fans are absolutely cocksure of themselves coming to Ewood Park. So if we're not on it, if we're hitting the levels that we have been recently at Ewood Park, I absolutely believe we'll lose that game. Do I think we will? I think it's probably a different story. I fancy us to get ourselves over the line. But if we're not on it, and if we play like we did in that second half against Huddersfield, we will go out, absolutely. But I'm just expecting a bit of a response, maybe the pressure off because it's not Championship football. Maybe JDT might be more minded to do something different formationally, particularly now he knows he's not going to have Pickering or Carter. Maybe that will just unlock us a little bit, I don't know. But it's going to be a fantastic game, and I would usually say that everyone would be rooting for the underdog and rooting for Wrexham, but I'm not sure that that's the case, because I think not many fans outside of Wrexham like Wrexham at the moment. So maybe Rovers will have the neutral support as well.
Yeah, I think you might be right with that assessment, to be quite honest. And Wrexham have obviously got previously knocked Coventry City out of the third round last season away from home as well. I think that was 4-3 in a pretty bonkers game. So drama seems to follow Wrexham, and not just because they usually have the cameras rolling, but yeah, it does worry you a little bit. Rovers should have the quality to get over the line. They are a better football team, of course they are. They're a team in the Championship. Wrexham are flying high and probably will get promoted out of League Two into League One, but it's going to be a good day out for the Wrexham fans, a ground many have not been to, and it's probably just a bit more important to them at the moment, which is what makes you concerned. Rovers are going to have to match the enthusiasm and intensity of the Wrexham players. Albeit, in fairness, JDT has always enjoyed the cup games. He's always given a big hand whenever they've played the cup. I know he's made changes, particularly in the Carabao Cup, but I do genuinely believe he enjoys the cup games. So I do think he will genuinely be up for it, and especially with a lot of fans in the stadium. Well, prediction, Ryan, what do you think it's going to be? How do you think it's going to unfold?
I think it'll be a nervy 2-1 for Rovers. I do think it's got the potential to have a load of goals in this game, but whenever you predict loads of goals, it never pans out like that. So my head is probably saying something like 5-4 or 4-3 or something daft like that, because defensively, we're obviously not very good at the moment, but maybe it won't pan out like that, and maybe it'll be a bit of a nervy 2-1 for Rovers. But I do fancy us to have that quality, a bit similar to what we saw with Cambridge. You know, a lot of enthusiasm, the ability to hurt us, but in the end, we get the job done. That's how I'm seeing it for Rovers. So, yeah, 2-1 Rovers. And do you know what? All the off-pitch stuff at the moment, the funding pressures with Venkies and all of those things, are running the cup is absolutely worth its weight in gold, literally, at the moment, because we need every penny we can get. So, whether it's Waggett or someone, if they're in the changing rooms as well, saying from a non-footballing side, the importance of this fixture, we absolutely need every penny. So we need to be progressing as far as we can. And I said on a previous pod that the draw is opening up slightly with some of the teams that have gone out and will go out in this round as well. So lots of incentive for Rovers. And to be honest, none of us want to be on the receiving end of that, do we? Do we really want to be on that documentary? Losing to them at Ewood Park, and it's there in time on Netflix or whatever. Do we really, really want that? That's what I'd be saying to the players. Do you want to be immortalized for the wrong reasons? We would be their biggest scalp in this new era of Ryan Reynolds. Do we really want that? I don't think I do. So I think we'll get it done. 2-1, Elliot.
Showing your age there a little bit, Ryan, because it's Disney Plus. It's on, not Netflix.
Oh, Disney Plus. It's not. Well, yeah, there you go.
I'm going to go for a free...
I've embarrassed myself.
You have embarrassed yourself a little bit. There's too many streaming platforms nowadays.
Yeah, there is. Thank you. You've saved me there.
Yeah, I'm trying my best. I'm going to go for a 3-2 Rovers win. I think there'll be chaos. I think there'll be goals. I think everything that you've just said, I agree with, but I'm actually going to put my neck on the line and predict it. So I think Rovers will win 3-2. But I do think there's going to be nerves. I think there'll be tears. And I think there will be a Hollywood ending, but for Blackburn Rovers. That is what we are certainly hoping for on this podcast. That brings us to an end of this week's pod. Thank you, as always, for listening. Make sure you subscribe to Arte Labore in your podcast app of choice and follow the Lancashire Telegraph at Blackburn Rovers and check out the website for the most comprehensive Rovers coverage this season. You can subscribe to the Lancashire Telegraph as well to support local journalism. You'll get a better reading experience with fewer ads, subscriber-only content, and plenty more perks as well. The current offer is £3 for 3 months or £26, which is half price, for your first year on an annual subscription. So go and take advantage of that with the transfer window coming to a close in the next 9 days. Thank you for listening, as always, and we'll catch you again next week for another episode of Arte Labore.